to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. A number of Native conferences and gatherings that were normally held in person were forced online last year because of the pandemic. Organizers continue to put events online with no clear idea when live gatherings will return. Today, we'll hear about a hoop dance competition that is all virtual and how stand-up comedy works when the audience is on video chat. We go live right after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Grassroots groups are calling for justice for a Native man who was tased by a National Park Service ranger in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The incident, recorded by the sister of Daryl House last week, shows House being tased by a park ranger at Petroglyph National Park. The Red Nation and Pueblo Action Alliance are calling for the termination of the ranger, seeking restitution and an apology to House and his sister. The groups held a prayer walk over the weekend to the national park demanding justice. According to the Red Nation, House, his sister, and dog were hiking and offering prayers in the park when they say they went off the trail to avoid other hikers when the incident ensued. The nearly 4-minute, 30-second video of the incident showing House being tased went viral. The National Park Service released a longer 9-minute lapel video showing more of the confrontation while an investigation is underway. Petroglyph National Park, located on Tiwa Territory, is home of ancient rock art and is a spiritual and cultural place for Indigenous people. Members of the grassroots group say Indigenous people have the right to practice their culture and spiritual ways on Indigenous land without the fear of repression, discrimination, or violence. Members of the Native American community of Greater Kansas City demonstrated outside the Kansas City football team stadium during the last regular season game Sunday, calling for the team to change its name and for sports teams to end the use of Native American imagery. The group Not in Our Honor includes students, educators, and leaders of Native organizations. Ed Smith, who works with the Kansas City Indian Center, was among the group.
Well, I think it's been pretty important to be out here and show the people of Kansas City that this issue matters, really, that we're out here and that we're committed to it, that it's just not a one-time thing and that we're not going to go away.
The coalition has been hosting events outside the stadium during home games. Members of the 117th Congress were sworn in Sunday. Six Indigenous members from both parties were among those to take the oath of office. From New Mexico, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Hawaii, including New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland, who's being tapped by the Biden-Harris transition team for Secretary of the Interior. Haaland, in a statement, said top priorities are COVID-19 and recovery from the pandemic. Tribal communities have been hit hard by COVID-19. Economic recovery, healthcare, housing, education, sacred site protection, and many other Indian country issues are on the agenda for tribes seeking action as new and returning members of Congress get to work. The Coquel tribe is looking forward to opening a health clinic miles away from its headquarters to help American Indian and Alaska Native people. KLCC's Brian Bull has more.
The tribe's already developing a wellness center in Coos Bay, but citing the potlatch tradition of sharing resources, Coquel officials say they're starting a new one in Eugene, where an estimated 6,000 Indigenous people live. The Coquel tribe's executive director, Mark Johnston, says the clinic will start in earnest before expanding to full services in April.
We will initially begin providing flu shot clinics and some COVID testing here by the end of the month. Our special message to all the American Indian Alaska Natives that live in Lane County and even outside of Lane County that we're looking forward to serving them and that we'll be open as soon as we can for them.
The new clinic will incorporate culturally sensitive elements in both its design and application of health and medicine. It'll be based in the North Eugene, Santa Clara area next to an existing dental clinic and physical therapy center. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Sanosky Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shirwifdui via Skype. Event organizers had to get good at online meetings pretty fast when the pandemic started. Now, after almost a year, virtual conferences, contests, webinars, and office check-ins are the norm. That doesn't mean they're easy or that they accomplish everything in-person meetings do. You've probably experienced the frustrations of virtual meetings, one person with loud background noise or another person who can't figure out how to unmute. Well, the pandemic isn't over, and it looks like we're going to see a lot more virtual gatherings for the time being. Conferences and gatherings have always been a staple of organizing and education in Native America. Today, we're going to hear what organizations and individuals have learned about getting the most out of online meetups, and we'd also like to hear from you, too. What did you learn about meeting up virtually? Tell us about it. Phone lines are open. Number to join is 1-800-996-2848. Also, if you have an event that's coming up that's going to be virtual, you can also call in and share details. Join us again. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And today we're going to start off in the Allegheny Seneca Territory in Salamanca, New York. We have Dennis Bowen with us. He is the MC for the Heard Museum World Championship Hoop Dance Contest. And Dennis is a citizen of the Seneca Nation. Our pleasure to have him here with us. Dennis, welcome to Native America Calling.
Oh, thank you, Terry. Yawaskano. It's good to be on this program, and Tara, you're doing a great job, and Native American Calling has really helped our people, and I know we got Jackie and Carla and Steve also on this show, so we'll try to get going.
Well, that's a good start, and thank you for bringing in the language you were given in to start us off in this day, start us off in this week, start us off in this new year. So I guess I owe a big Happy New Year to everybody, too. Thanks for being with us, Dennis. Also on the line from Okeawinge Pueblo, we have Steve Lawrence. He is the co-chair of the Lightning Boy Foundation, and Steve is Hopi and Assiniboine. Steve, it's great to reconnect with you on our Native airwaves. Welcome.
Good morning, Tara. Good morning, everybody. Lomat Dalauva. And I want to wish everybody a Hoopy New Year as well.
Very nice. And so, Dennis and Steve, the Hoop Dance Competition. There is a lot of history, and we have been honored to crack into some of that here in the past. And so this year, there is a real new chapter coming up for the Hoop Dance Contest that each year hundreds, maybe even thousands, participate in as well as attend. And so this year, things are going to be different. Steve, start us off a little bit of how things are going to change, but yet still be there in the tradition it was given. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Tara. Yes, the Heard Museum, they, we had a difficult time determining if the hoop dance was going to happen this year. And thankfully, because of the dedication of the staff of the Heard Museum and all the advisors, we decided to do a virtual event this year because of the pandemic. And so all the information can be found on herd.org. We're very happy that we have contestants registering, and we want to emphasize that the information that they need to register can be found at herd.org. And the deadline is only a week away, Monday, January 11th. So we want to encourage all the dancers to check on the social media page of the Herd Museum, as well as the herd.org, and get all the contest information for this year's event, which will be virtual.
And so, Steve, growing it this way, what are your thoughts? Do you think even more people will participate than they've been able to in the past?
Well, we are definitely hoping to get more registrants this year because they don't have to worry about travel or lodging or anything. So there are some challenges, you know, that they have to look at as far as, you know, getting the registration in. We have to have time to verify their certificates of Indian blood or their First Nation status. And then they also have to present a video, which should be submitted at a certain date, I believe is January 18th. So that's the deadline for video submission. So we are willing to help any of the dancers in any of these technical issues they may have. And I think Dennis and the committee and I have really spoke about what we can do to try to help our contestants submit videos if they're not as tech savvy as others are. So there will be some challenges, but we want to continue this the celebratory event, the hoop dance. It's has a lot of meaning for Native people, and there's so many fans of hoop dancing that we just want it to continue until we can do this, and hopefully we'll be able to return to our normal in-person world championship in 2022.
And Dennis, your thoughts? You have been there for, you've been a part of this for decades, and knowing how important it is to make these connections, what are your thoughts about going virtual?
Well, first of all, we just want to thank Rob Zotai and Dennis Zotai, who brought the World Championship to the Herd Museum 30 years ago. The very first one was in Albuquerque, and then the next one was in Phoenix, and now the 30th we did last February in Phoenix. So 31 years this has been going on. So thank you, Ralph and Dennis Zotai. Now, yes, we have created hoop dance fans all around Mother Earth. There's been more than 2 million collective views on the how this is covered. I'm not a technology guy, but on the Facebook and YouTube channels, we have a lot of people following, over 2 million. There's more than 3 million organic impressions and 75,000 unique users on the Facebook and YouTube channels of the Herd Museum. So a lot of people are learning about this healing dance, and we've had grandmothers and mothers speak about this as a healing dance. And actually, there are two medicine people that our family worked with that have done the hoop dance as part of a healing ceremony in the winter up in the mountains. And so it is a part of its origin is part of a healing dance. And so what has happened with all across indigenous territories and urban indigenous communities, there are no public events, and you'll hear that from Jackie and Carla as well. And so we've had to find other ways to reach our people. And so we're going to go virtual this year. This will not be a world championship because we currently have 4 world title holders for the age groups, youth, teen, senior, and then the big one, the adult world champion. They're going to carry their title for a second year and defend it, as Steve was saying, in 2022, in February. But with this just horrible pandemic, we've lost so many people. And our hoop dancers all across the Turtle Island, you know, Canada, United States, they haven't been able to perform.
and they perform for schools, for the community, for organizations, and they do this for children, and they haven't been able to do that. And we didn't want them to feel left out and neglected. And there are so many ways that people have been isolated and feel alone. And so we're telling hoop dancers, you're not alone. The Hurd Museum is going to do this virtual event. And we want to encourage the hoop dance family out there. There are so many. We've had over 94 dancers at the last World's Championship, and that's a lot of dancers. The very first time in Phoenix 30 years ago, we only had 7 hoop dancers. So this has really grown, and it has touched a lot of people. There's a lot of hoop dance fans that in Phoenix, we got snowbirds. So the average hoop dance fan is like 65 years old, and they love these hoop dancers. And these hoop dancers have their own fan clubs in the audience each year. So there's so much energy. And as we said, it's part of a healing ceremony. And we do need a lot of healing and the recovery from this pandemic. And, you know, we say this with suffering, with a deep sadness. We've lost our own relatives, our neighbors, our people. So we're going to hold together and then put on this virtual hoop dance. And as some of our elders would say, they would say, come and listen to these songs. Cheer up, cheer up. You know, lift up your spirit with these songs. And so this is what we're going to do, have a virtual hoop dance contest. And thank you.
Yeah, and that circle is opening even wider today, just learning about it. And for you, maybe you have had a chance in the past to see some of this gathering, either in person or even online. And as you were saying some of that, Dennis, I remember watching some of the competition last year from the live feed. And then here we are thinking about calling on this technology again to bring us back to this important circle. And we learn a lot. And I think that big lesson that the hoop dance teaches us is about healing and thinking about the times we're in and type of healing we do need. It's really exciting to hear that you all are stepping into this circle in a different way. Folks, we'll hear more about this competition, but what about you? What have you experienced this year of having to go virtual? Lessons learned, anything you want to share, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're live and we're ready for your call. Vaccines against COVID-19 are being administered in Native communities that are disproportionately affected by the pandemic. Medical professionals, first responders, and vulnerable citizens are first in line, but not everyone is getting in line for the shot. We'll check in on vaccine distribution on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship and want to talk, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a confidential and anonymous domestic violence helpline for Native Americans available at 1-844-762-8483 or connect with a live advocate by using the Chat Now button at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer support and referrals for resources daily, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. This program supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about virtual conferences and gatherings today. Have you attended an online event, a webinar, or conference because of the pandemic? Call us and tell us about it. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And this also goes for live events. Maybe this is the first time you have seen your audience via the computer. How does that change things? Has it brought people closer? Give us a call. We want to hear from everybody. 1-800-996-2848. With us on the line out of Okeawinge Pueblo is Steve Lawrence, and out of the Allegheny Seneca Territory is Mr. Dennis Bowen. Both of them are here talking a little bit about the Heard Museum World Championship Hoop Dance Contest. They're doing something special this year. They're going to be presenting the hoop dance virtually in a new way. And so, gentlemen, I do want to get the details, too, of how it'll go. Maybe this is more for the people who are going to be participating, who are wondering, okay, how do we do this? You know, how's the judging going to go? What do I need to show as I turn in my video? Steve, anything you want to share with us on details and just informing that way? All right, maybe we need to get him back. Dennis, are you there?
Yes. Yeah, as Steve was saying, registration closes Monday night, January 11th, next week. And then we are asking hoop dancers to get someone to video them, film them, get those videos submitted by January 18th. And then the awards, the virtual contest will be February 13th. We have judges, Rustin Turpahoe, he's Kiowa. We have Tom Phillips from California, and he's Kiowa. We have from Six Nations, Ontario. We have an Onondaga judge, and she'll be there for her second year as a judge. And her name is Doach, and she's, you know, she really knows dancing. We have another judge, Eric Swimmer, who was the very first world champion 31 years ago in Albuquerque with Ralph Zotai and Dennis Zotai. And so Eric is one of our judges. And so we have plans to maybe have one or two more judges, because there may be a lot of videos to see. And we've got four age groups, youth, teen, adult, and the seniors. So we've got to work out the judging portion. We have Dennis Zotai put into this plan the Olympic Likert scale, which judges different categories of dancing. And we look at timing and rhythm. The next one is speed. The next one is creativity. The other one is showpersonship, and we're, you know, gender equal community. We don't say showmanship, we say showpersonship. How about that, Tara? Anyhow, so we have five criteria to judge these dancers. These dancers have come year after year, and they know which criteria they may have to practice at to get their scores up. It really works. We had one year, the world champion won with a score, let's say, 324 points. Second place was only 1 point difference, 323. Third place was 322. So this system works, and we do give these dancers a fair chance to do their best, and they can see their score right after they dance. And they can see what parts of their dance they can work on for the next round. And it's exciting.
There's a lot going on, and especially when you say speed, because, you know, just the pace that these dancers have to work at to, you know, maneuver through the hoops, it's a lot. And if you've never seen any of this, Google it. And you can even Google Heard Museum World Championship Hoop Dance Contest, and you'll see exactly what we're talking about. And I'm really glad to hear that this dance is being kept alive, you know, even through the pandemic. And, you know, it's something that was given to us for these kind of times. And knowing that you are still, you know, bringing that hoop dance family together, it is something important, and maybe important to you too. If you want to share some thoughts, 1-800-996-2848. Looks like we got Steve back. And Steve, any more details you want to give about the virtual hoop dance?
Yes. This year is going to be an exciting new event, and the online event will actually be streamed on the Heard Museum's Facebook and YouTube channels on Saturday, February 13th. So people can actually tune in and view all of these exciting things Dennis was talking about, you know, watching the athleticism and the originality and the showpersonship. As he mentioned, we'll have four competitive age divisions, and we'll have a virtual grand entry celebrating for all the contestants. And cash prizes will be given out to the top three competitors in each age division. And there's also a viewer's choice. So if you do tune in, you can actually vote for your favorite dancer. So we're trying to make this a very exciting, unique event. And we hope that we'll get more registered dancers to participate. And we hope that we'll have more viewers this year, since everything is virtual and we have a worldwide reach.
Well, gentlemen, we definitely wish you the best with all of that. And if you want to talk to either Dennis or Steve, you can call in now, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and hear from a caller. We're going to say hi to Daniel in Española, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Daniel, thank you for listening today. Go ahead. You're on air.
Greetings and Happy New Year. Hello, hello. I just wanted to call in and say, well, first of all, I love your program. You guys are so informative, and just I just love listening to you guys all the time. And and as far as the virtual events go, I'm a professional musician, and well, obviously, the my life is drastically different than it was a year ago, and adapting to it has been at once distressing and also refreshing, you know, where I'm able to kind of do things differently as opposed to, you know, the hustle and bustle and the rush and the, handing out flyers, selling, slinging tickets, all that stuff. And so recently, my solo project, the Star Jammer, was booked to play a holiday performance with a New York ska band called the Slackers, and it was a really interesting way to approach an event. It was on livefrom.com, I believe, and myself and three other opening acts. We all submitted shorter segments, and then the Slackers did a longer, I forget, it was probably like 90 minute set or something. So the whole show was, you know.
And you're having to morph, I guess, in a way and present some of this. What do you think is the biggest lesson about all this that you're learning, and especially with people that they want to connect, they want to still hear the music despite all this? Well, for you, what's the biggest lesson through going virtual?
The biggest lesson has been one in patience, I suppose, because, you know, with a live event, you're sort of, or, you know, when you're on a stage, you're able to just, you know, put it out there and then it's done, you know. And then, but with a virtual event, you actually have the opportunity to, plan something out, find some good angles, find some good lighting, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that type of stuff takes some patience, you know, especially if you're not entirely technically savvy. You know, for myself, I'm an analog kid living in a digital world, I guess. So there's, you know, I run into these roadblocks where it's like, oh, I need that cable, you know, or,
sure.
Oh,
especially
I
having
need that
to do
light.
Some of these kind of transitions on the fly too. I think we all have patience too on the other end when things are getting started too, because we know you're getting your head around, you know, technology and then that excitement of knowing people are gathering together to do some of this. And I like your word, patience. We got to just pour it full on that one. Daniel, thank you for reaching out. Wish you the best, putting out more of your music, connecting with your audiences. We're glad you're here too, our audience, learning, thinking with us. If you want to join too, call in 1-800-996-2848. Right now, we're going to go to Oakland, California. We have Jackie Kali'i Aha and she is a stand-up comedian and writer and producer. And Jackie is Yerington Paiute and Washoe. Jackie, my pleasure to have you here. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi, good morning, Tara. Hanga Maheji. That's how you say hello in Washoe.
Well, thank you for that. And Jackie, I want to go straight to audiences because Daniel got us there about being, online, doing virtual things and performing. And you're here to talk a little bit about comedy and hosting comedy online. And a lot of times the magic of that space is hearing the laughter and thinking about audiences being virtual. I'm real curious how things have gone for you. Tell us a little bit about some of your experience about presenting comedy virtually.
Sure. So as you all know, the public events got canceled. And in the before times, I was producing a show here in Oakland, Amazonians, an all-woman comedy show with my friend Dar M. Wilson. And we had to pivot. I mean, really, the pandemic was adapt. So I bought a microphone and started playing with the audio settings on Zoom and began running virtual comedy shows. So I have to say, in the beginning, back in April, when I launched Indian Comedy Hour, an all-Native lineup once a week, that was rough, you know, just trying to get used to the settings and also used to how do you get folks not to talk over each other. I mean, we had a couple of shows where people were slurping soup in the background. So how do you deal with that? And I will say, having done comedy in the pandemic since April, we've really got it down to a science. And it's great because location's not an issue anymore. So we've got people dialing in from all over the country and beyond. So I started with Indian Comedy Hour, and it was a really fun show where we had lots of Native comics from all over. Again, location not being an issue, we could get comics from New Mexico, Minnesota, Washington, D.C., Arizona. But the audience, it was cool looking at the analytics in the end. There were people coming in from Ireland, from Norway, people that wanted to see Native comedy from not only our local Native nations here, but also Native folks from all over in different parts of the world. So that is really the big thing. We've never had this level of visibility for Native comedy. And I mean, not in the physical way that we had before. So I think that was the big win, I'd say, Tara, is that the audience can come in from everywhere and there's demand for it. And I think that's something that as a producer of shows, you know, curating the shows, getting the marketing out there, putting the lineup together, you get a chance to see on the back end, there's a lot of support. And, the pandemic really got very challenging for the Southwest, in particular in May of last year. And so Indian Comedy Hour turned into Good Medicine, and Good Medicine Comedy became a fundraiser. And so we raised, over $11,000 over the course of our shows. And, again, raised money for National Congress of American Indians, raised money for Indian Collective, organizations providing frontline support for COVID-19 relief. So it was really created as a way to give back, you know, to be able to help. And literally that's why the name Good Medicine came out, was we wanted to bring laughter into people's homes and lift their spirits during really challenging times. And so it was fun to put on the shows and then just get, you know, direct messages from folks saying, hey, thank you so much. I'm a frontline worker and just needed that laughter. You know, so that's really been the blessing, so to speak, of going virtual, is getting to reach more people and getting to bring them laughter in really dark times.
Sure. We can all use more laughter. Bring it on. Bring it on. And Jackie, if people do want to catch some of the things that have gone down, is there an archive or anything coming up?
Yeah, so I would please, folks, go to facebook.com/goodmedicinecomedy. That's where we've been running all of our benefit shows. We have been very lucky not only to work with awesome Native comics like Adrienne Chalapas, she runs the Ladies in Native Comedy, Bobby Wilson from the 1491s, Dallas Goldtooth. We've also had great support from nationally known acts. Judah Friedlander, folks might know him from 30 Rock. Lori Kilmartin, she's the head writer for Conan, the TV show. And, so having those folks has really added more visibility to our events. But, yes, we are definitely, you know, we're in this for longer, And so we know that we're going to start producing shows. So please add us on Facebook, again, /, Good Medicine Comedy. And then if folks want to DM me directly, if they have any recommendations for Native comics they want to catch on the next Good Medicine show, or if there are organizations they recommend as beneficiaries for the next shows, please let us know. And you can also catch me at Jackie Comedy on Instagram, Twitter, and Venmo. Haha, just kidding.
And Jackie, when you think of delivering a joke online, how does that differ from being in a comedy club or in a public setting? Got about a minute.
Oh, yeah, it is different. It is different. I will say the secret sauce to our productions and doing Zoom comedy is having a moderator on hand that can help mute things. But when it comes to delivering a joke, you know, it's kind of the same. You just wait till you hear that laughter, and it can sometimes be delayed due to internet connectivity. so you just have to. It's really just thinking on your feet, which is something you have to do in comedy, no matter what, any stage you're in front of. I will say, for comics who've really adapted and taken to Zoom, I feel like on the other end of this, when we actually get to hit a stage and go on and perform in front of a live audience, I feel like we're definitely going to be stronger at it because we can see the visual cues. We see the audience. We see their shoulders moving, their eyes, their laughter. You know, those kind of visual cues are key to us as well as comics. So I definitely think having to adapt is going to have made us stronger on the other end. But there's nothing like some good laughter. I love hearing an audience, and that's why we make sure people are not muted because performing to a muted audience is pretty rough. So, again, it can be done.
There's a lot of room for comedy when it comes to connecting virtually too. And that's exciting. Thank you for that. We'll hear more about what people are doing going virtual. If you've gone virtual, tell us about it. 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working with tribal communities across the nation to address the opioid crisis. Breaking the cycle starts with preventing opioid misuse, treating opioid use disorder with medications and counseling, and recovery support during all phases of recovery. If you or a loved one is challenged by opioid use disorder, you can find additional information at aaip.org.
Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling. We appreciate you tuning in, and thank you for starting off your year with us right here. We're live on these Native airwaves, and we are taking a look at what people are doing to make sure they're still connecting with audiences and communities that are important to them. Some of it has meant going online to hold events, gatherings, meetings. We know you're a part of it too. Any comments on it? We're talking about comedy right now. Maybe all of this seems like a comedy to you. You can share your thoughts by dialing in 1-800-996-2848. With us on the line today is Jackie Kali'i'a. And she comes to us out of Oakland, California. She is here with us. She is a stand-up comedian, a writer, and a producer. And so, Jackie, just thinking about going virtual and doing comedy through videos, there's a lot, too, that happens visually. And sometimes it gets real funny just seeing some of the backgrounds or people who are doing some of those virtual backgrounds. And then something happens and a cat walks by. You know, it's pretty interesting. Any thoughts about just what it also means to prepare a space to do some of this stuff online?
Oh, that's so funny you mentioned that, because there are some times during a show where someone starts to discipline their kid in the background, and it's so funny, and you can't not mention it. Because in a live show, if something like that happens, you kind of have to call it out, and it just, there are those sort of special moments that happen in a live performance in the physical world that also have happened in our virtual shows. But I will say the audience figured out quickly how to adapt as well, just like comedians adapted, you know, getting the proper equipment, getting special lighting so that they can really sort of show up and put their best foot forward in their performance. The audience started to figure it out too. So we found over the months as they would go and as we were putting on more Good Medicine shows and producing other shows, that the audience kind of picked it up and figured out, okay, I'm going to go on mute now because I'm eating loudly, but I'll go off mute because now I'm done eating and I can start laughing into my microphone. So, yeah, I would say they figured it out too. Just like we all adapted the performers, the audience also figured out how am I a better audience member being on this show. So I'd say we did Amazonians is the show that I was producing in Oakland, an all-women show. We did our last show about 2 weeks ago, and it was fantastic. We had over 200-some-odd people tuned into that show, and it was just – it ran so smoothly. So, you know, everyone's figuring it out along the way.
They definitely are. And, Jackie, is there anything you have for comedians who are saying – okay, it's time for me to do this. I just heard about it on Native America Calling. It's happening. Any advice for those trying Zoom or Connect or anything like that for the first time to get their comedy out there?
Yeah, well, first off, go for it. Do it. No better time than the present. I was kind of one of those artists that hemmed and hawed for about 2 years before I finally got up to my first open mic. So go for it, do it. And really, there's so many Native comics all throughout the country. And there's actually a book coming out in February by Cliff Nesteroff. And he basically interviews a bunch of different Native comedians throughout the country and talks about Charlie Hill, the godfather of Native comedy. If you don't know him, Google him now. And, you know, I would really suggest, you know, reach out to other comics. You've got Adrian Chalapa, who runs the Ladies in Native Comedy. You've got the 1491s. And I will say it's a ripe time in that in 2021, there's going to be two Native run TV shows. So one of them is Rutherford Falls that's coming up. And actually Bobby Wilson, who's performed on a couple of my shows, is a writer for that TV show. And then also Reservation Dogs is coming out as well. That's by Sterling Harjo and Taika Waititi. So never a better time. Reach out to us. Say hello. Hit me up on Instagram. Hi, where do I go? And then each community, each region has their own open mic network, you know? And so anyway, there's so many ways to get connected and just start making content on your phone because people are tuning in now. People want to see things. So you can even do something low key like that. Start making fun videos. So that's my insight. But get out there and do it. We need more Native comedians out there.
Very nice. Jackie, thank you for being here with us. Maybe you're a comedian, have some thoughts, reach out 1-800-996-2848. And right now we're going to go to Anchorage, Alaska. We have Carla Booth on the line. She is the Indigenous Leadership Continuum Director for First Alaskans Institute, and she is Simpson and from Metlakatla. Our pleasure to have her here. Carla, thank you for being on the line today. Please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Good morning. It makes my heart happy to be here with you. I am Carla Booth. I am Simpson of the Raven Clan, and my family comes from Metlakatla. And good morning from cold Anchorage, Alaska.
Very nice. And Carla, this year, the Elders and Youth Conference, it went virtual, and it was so much wealth of information that was shared, and I really enjoyed tuning in and just seeing still how the interaction was going on, even pulling off to side rooms to do some teaching of traditional things. And so for you, thinking about, you know, using this kind of platform to keep the legacy of elders and youth going, I want to hear some of your thoughts or some of the things that happen because, you know, how important this gathering is, and you went virtual. Anything you want to share, Carla?
I'm happy to report that, you know, our 37th annual Elders and Youth Conference was a success. We achieved the same warmth virtually as we do when we meet in person. And, you know, we were able to keep a lot of our traditional sessions intact. But, of course, we also expanded and added new things. The main point of Elders and Youth is to encourage that transference of traditional knowledge from our elders to our youth. and everybody else that also attends. And I think based on the comments that I heard, a lot of people achieved that goal and that value. We heard a lot of comments that people enjoyed hearing from our elders. And we heard a lot of people that said, oh, they want to continue learning more about, you know, this traditional art or that traditional practice. And that's the whole point. That's the whole point of this annual gathering that's been going on for so long. You know, we had probably over a thousand people register for our event. And then we had about 600 of them actually set up profiles on our app that we used. So that really showed us that people were excited, not only for the event, but to engage in the event and share with each other as they took the journey through Elders and Youth Conference for the 4 days that we were hosting. So it was just a really eye-opening experience. It's clear that we really needed to make sure that this gathering continued. And there was no doubt that we weren't going to continue it. We have the responsibility at First Alaskans to be good relatives to our people throughout the state. And we knew that we wouldn't let just some little pandemic hinder this tradition that so many have made a success through the years.
And Carla, something that I was thinking about just watching some of this interaction, one of the things with elders and youth is actually bringing these two sides of the spectrum of our community together so that they can continue to learn from each other. And we know this type of technology is something that our young people use on the norm. When there was no pandemic, they were used to doing video chat or, you know, even getting into podcasts and things like that. And so did you see a certain type of leadership that the young people kind of took to help the elders? And I know, you know, a lot of times when we have run into technology or even just talking with people for the show, you know, I'll say, is there anybody young in your house who can help you connect? Did they kind of take a leadership role in all of this of using these mediums that they're so used to and bringing their elders into this? Did any of that go on?
I think we had pockets of that. You know, I think our youth did step up when needed to help out the elders that were in their homes, as well as their parents. I heard from one mother that, you know, she attended Elders and Youth in her home with her daughters, and she was so grateful for this opportunity because she learned so much from her daughters. She said that without this conference, she wouldn't, or it gave her the opportunity to learn how to create and post online videos. Her daughters taught her how to do this, and she just was so grateful that this experience kind of pushed that type of learning. I know within our staff, we had to kind of adjust to troubleshoot when we would get phone calls from our elders or other community members that were having a difficult time, you know, logging into the Zooms or getting their profile set up or registering. And so our team, we really had to shift to making one-on-one phone calls and troubleshooting with people. And it was beautiful to hear the stories, the success stories of helping some of our elders throughout the state, you know, really walking them through each step to ensure that they're going to be able to participate in our gathering online. And it was wonderful just to hear, I think, the eagerness of our elders to learn and the eagerness of our elders to participate in this virtual event. I think our elders are more tech savvy than we give them credit for. But I would also say too that our youth are also willing and capable to step up and help out. And we don't always give them that credit, too. I think some of our youth were a little hesitant at times to participate in our online gathering. But once they felt more comfortable and got words of encouragement from those that were in those breakout rooms or in the plenary, they really spoke up and shared their voice, shared their thoughts and their opinions, their experience with everybody in attendance. So I also heard a lot of comments about just being very proud of our youth and their knowledge and abilities today.
I got to give big ups too to those who you had, kind of hosting it, and those young people. They were great. They were great in getting, you know, segment to segment, and, you know, just being in this profession. I see a lot of talent and really commend those young people for the great job that they did. And Carla, if there are people who didn't get a chance, don't even know about elders and youth, is there any archive that people can go through and experience some of what you've been explaining today?
Oh, definitely. Encourage people to visit our firstalaskans.org website to just learn about First Alaskans Institute. But then also, please visit our social media. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. And definitely on Facebook, we have our videos posted from the conference. And we also have a YouTube Facebook profile. And so all of our videos from Elders and Youth are posted on there. And we're hoping to add more from the conference. We've got to do some editing first before we post those and get some permissions. But the whole idea is to make sure that, you know, that traditional knowledge gets perpetuated and shared. So we want to make sure that we post those videos from all of our workshops and our sessions.
And on the planning side, any advice?
Oh, geez. Advice for others, I would say it's really important to have a strong IT team, either in-house within your own organization, or even somebody that you hire to come in and help you host your large-scale virtual event. We did all of ours in-house. I would also say, you know, be inclusive. Allow participation by phone if you're hosting a virtual conference, a video conference. It was just so wonderful that we were able to, our team was able to connect our elder keynote speaker, the Dr. Reverend and Traditional Chief Trimble Gilbert from Arctic Village. He was on phone, and our team was in the background making phone calls to him to make sure that he was connected to give his keynote address, and it was so well worth the effort. So make sure you allow people to participate by phone. And I'd also add, just be flexible and do the best that you can in solving problems. I heard earlier Jackie mentioned just the ability to adapt, and I just can't agree with that anymore. Like, you have to be adapt, you have to be flexible, and you have to have grace with yourself. It's okay. You're going to make mistakes, and technology is going to have little hiccups and speed bumps, but just deal with it the best that you can, and know that if you're doing your work with a good heart, everybody in your audience that's tuning in is going to feel that and know that, and it's going to be okay with them. They're there for a reason.
Very nice. And, you know, it's interesting to hear from the different people who have been on the line today and just their thoughts about jumping into the space and making sure that they're still connecting with those that are important to them. There's a lot of stories, and I know you have a story too. Maybe you didn't get a chance to call in, but if you have something that you've experienced and you want to tell us about it, you can always email us. comments@nativeamericacalling.com is the number. And maybe there's an event that is coming up. You can also reach out to us on Facebook. Just look up Native America Calling. And real quick, Carla, again, the website where people can connect with First Alaskans Institute.
It's firstalaskans.org, and then also First Alaskans Institute Facebook and Twitter.
Okay, there you go. More places to connect. And that's going to wrap it up for our hour. Thank you to everybody that we heard from today on the program, including out of New York, Dennis Bowen, out of Okeawinge, Steve Lawrence, also Jackie Kali'i'a'a out of Oakland, California, and Carla Booth out of Anchorage. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org.
Tahis nitseta tihiela nytanhetega itse ytetia satisai noitsi kaskoli tanehtoti tohi tetehti ale osta tsejelti hiela nytanhetega i tatlanoheta niauja ojela nytanhetega anaksestiski naski yiget stela at healthcare.gov ale 1-800-318-2596 he aketa nosa Medicare ale Medicaid unadalka i.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.